and greetings from the 21st century. I'm Chris Austin, and joining me today is Luke Parker. Welcome back, Luke.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Great having you. And returning guest and manager of the Phoenix Cinema, Zaylin Paul. Welcome back, Zaylin.
Well, hello, guys. My pleasure, and I'm excited. I mean, had such a good time the last time around. So, yeah, looking forward to this episode.
As am I. Oh, my goodness, as am I. What a movie to discuss. For those of the uninitiated, this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week, we're discussing the 1963 Czech movie, Ikari XB1, also known as Voyage to the End of the Universe, directed by Jindřich Polák. This film was screened as part of Phoenix Cinema's Second Run Sundays. Second Run is a UK-based film distribution company dedicated to classic and contemporary world cinema titles. They curated four Sunday screenings for Phoenix of the finest Czech, Slovak, Polish, and Hungarian films spanning the 1950s to the 1980s, concluding with this seminal film. Ikari XB1, guys. First of all, can we just say coolest title ever? Come
Very
on.
Very cool title. Yeah.
Ikari XB1. That is the shit. There's no need to change it to Voyage to the End of the Universe. We don't need that.
This American version, I think the Americans probably were like, okay, we need, because every sci-fi film has to have Voyage in a title, right? So it's probably XB1, it wouldn't be as, you know, like pleasing for the American ears and eyes. But no, it is a super cool title. Yeah. And I just want to give you guys the flowers, because it's probably one of my favorite films we screened so far in this plastic setting. And for you guys to pick this movie, it just warms my heart. And it's like you have a good eye for something, even if you've not seen it before. And maybe the title sent out some, you know, like waves to you that, okay, me, this something about this film that, you know, maybe you need to check it out and you know, hopefully have a good time with it.
Yeah, I mean, because how we usually do it, you know, I look at what the Phoenix is programming, and there's like a list of, okay, on this given week, we'll decide which one to do. And I sent this list to Luke, and straight away, what was it? You were like, yeah, a bit of Soviet-era sci-fi sounds pretty good. and you're a fan, right, Luke, of the author, right, that from the book that film is based on.
Yeah, so this film is based on the book. I think it's called like the Magellanic Cloud,
yeah.
Which is from like 1955, which is like a short novel by Stanislav Lem. I think that's how you say his name.
Right.
Who's also the author of Solaris, which is one of my favorite sci-fi films.
Tarkovsky,
yeah, right? Which was adapted into a Tarkovsky film, yeah. Which that was in 1972, I think. Yeah.
I think, and you were going to start to notice this pattern on this podcast where anything Tarkovsky related is right up Luke's alley.
And, I have watched that, yeah.
On the last episode, his pairing was a Tarkovsky pairing. So expect the same again today. I'm going to make a
video. Yeah, I think you probably should, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go around. I mean, I'm sure I can pretty much guess what we all think. But what do you think, Luke? What are your thoughts?
Sure. I mean, I think this is a great slice of film and sci-fi history, especially like coming from behind the Iron Curtain. It's just a really interesting perspective as well. It's a really ambitious film, and I really love the visual effects in the film, the use of the practical effects. But I will say this straight out, that I don't think this film stands the test of time quite as well as films like 2001 and Solaris do.
Interesting.
Which is interesting, because I think both of those films are quite heavily inspired by this one.
Yeah.
It's a relatively short film, at least by modern standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where the film struggles for me is that it squeezes in quite a lot of almost episodic-like plot points that again, by modern standards, causes a really, really big lack of tension. They never really felt there were that much at stake at the film, within the film. There's a lot of interesting, like, anti-Western and anti-capitalist, like, tonalities throughout the film, and that really reaches its peak, you know, when they go and visit that. Well, in one part of the film, they go and land on this American ship from the 20th century. And it's just, it was a cool perspective to see a future where communism has prevailed from the Cold War and in this, like, communist utopia. I think it's a sci-fi film that's surprisingly heavy on, like, the scientific elements, some of which that are much more convincing than others. I think it's, you know, it touches on things like time dilation, which, you know, we're all familiar with from films like Interstellar, and the psychological and, like, personal effects of that, as well as, like, elements of astrobiology as well. But for example, there's the Dark Star in this film, which emits this new type of radiation, which that's the part that I found quite unconvincing and just not very well developed and almost a bit random, with, like, the effects of them all going to sleep. And it just didn't, it never felt like I was on the edge of my seat watching this film.
That
Yeah, it
is
definitely
so.
have a different formula, isn't it, in terms of the way you kind of like you used to certain like in a sci-fi genre as well, that there are some sort of like you have a threat and you need to overcome it. So this one is have a different kind of like structure to it, because you could say, you know, in the beginning you wouldn't even know if it's, you know, sci-fi. I mean, you know it because of locations and stuff, but it's like you learn more about the characters and, you know, the mundane things that's happening on a, you know, on, in the spaceship. So I think that's what it's good to sometimes to see different cultures and how they take on, you know, like a genre like this.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I actually, like, disagree, Luke. I was hooked. I was on the edge of my seat
Interesting.
throughout.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's because maybe my expectations for the movie weren't that high. You know, I going into it knowing that, okay, this is a lauded movie. It's meant to, you know, it predates Star Trek and 2001 and was a major influence on both. Okay, you know, but if it's the first, you know, maybe it was done better as time went on and others took their shot at it. I was so surprised by how gripping the film actually was. I agree with you in that it does feel episodic. It's like, okay, here's where they fall asleep, here's where they get radiation, here's where they board the other, you know, spaceship. But it didn't detract from anything for me, from the pure. I was so it was so suspenseful. And I think you're right. It does feel like a very short film by today's standards, to the point where it's like, you know, the movie ends and we're out. And I was like, what? You know, can we just go back to that? Can we go back to that? You know, it reminds me of like the 90s, you know, when you watch a good action film, as soon as the bad guy is dead, credits roll. And these days we'll have an extra half an hour to wind down. And there's none of that here. It's so compact, it's so tight. Yeah, I was so impressed by it. Zaylin, had you seen this movie before you screened it?
So yes and no, in a way. Like I've seen the Blu-ray version, but it's a different experience watching it in a cinema. So the way we work is that when we go through with the curation process, it's a dialogue with Mary, who's a fantastic, he's a founder of Second Run, and he just had incredible gems on a catalog. And it really brings different cultures that you've not heard of, and they really, it's like they historian film historians who find these little gems across, you know, the film landscape in various countries. And And when I was watching this film, what it reminded me of that, I agree that it has a different formula, but had this been an English spoken film, I think, or you know, and having a wide range of, you know, like release across the globe, you know, in the 60s, he might have gotten, you know, the cult status as the Solaris or the, you know, 2000 ones. And yeah, we're going through, usually it's like I'm interested in certain cultures, and I just drop him an idea. I was like, okay, well, I wanted to have a Polish film, I wanted to have an Hungarian film, I wanted to have like a Czech film, and I was like, okay, what are the options? And he was giving me a couple ideas, and I was like, okay, do you like sci-fi? And he's like, of course, that's my favorite genre of the horror. And it's like, okay, well, there's this film called Ikari XB at one, and that was my reaction was exactly like, okay, I'm sold.
Yes, the
Just
title alone, yeah.
chemistry. So I usually tend to watch these films before we play it, just because some of them be harder hitting movies. Like we showed a Polish film called Interrogation. It was a hard hitting film, and I was like, I wanted to see, you know, whether is it something that we want to show, or like how far can I push the boundaries for our audience? Because we have to sometimes challenge them. You can't just always, you know, pick the comfortable
I love
viewings. So I did see it before, but it was great to see it in a screen, and because I knew like a few things about it as well, I went into just like, oh, I'm gonna watch like an episode of Star Trek, and the way it starts off, you get these kind of vibes, because as I understand what you mean about the gripping part, it started for me like halfway through getting to more into the story. But in the beginning, it's just like a social gathering. It's just you learn, and that's what the element of it I liked it for personally, because there are a lot of like disaster films or sci-fi films. One of the issues I find that they might have incredible, you know, action sequences or productions, but do you really care about the characters? You know, so that's always important for me to learn more about the characters. And maybe they we actually have a bit too much in this one, but I like those little things, and the dance sequence, you know,
Oh, I
it's just
loved it. I
so
loved the
many
dance
little
sequence.
tiny little bits in it, and then it just, you know, that okay, well, there is an underlying thing going on, because you see in the first scene, we already know that okay, there's something is going to, you know, like happen here, besides all this little gathering amongst the crew. So yeah, overall, I was really impressed with a number of fronts, not just, you know, the model work, and then the some of the elements that he is considered pioneering at the time. But it's yeah, it's a great watch, and it's one of those things that you start to, you know, like think about the elements that they try to portray, that it goes beyond, you know, just the storyline, because it is still, it's a 60s film, and you know, you look at it, what was the political status at the time, and there are a lot of things that, you know, how it works, because Mally talked about it, in that in order to make those films to happen, you know, they had to go through these censoring boards when they approved the scripts. So there is probably, there may be even some elements that you can get away with political hints in a sci-fi, because when people are just reading it, they wouldn't even get it.
They
You
wouldn't
know,
yet.
like they wouldn't get it. So it's that's why I use sci-fi in a way, because then it's not so obvious when you're using certain analogies. But yeah, it was something that yeah, I was happy we screened it, and we had a decent crowd for it as well. And
I was going to
yeah,
ask, yeah.
it's
Yeah,
good reaction.
that's fascinating. Fascinating, especially to think about the time that it was made, and I think that's why it makes me so impressed with it, even more impressed with it. You know what I mean? How they pulled this off, I think it's incredible. I love what you're saying, Luke.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder as well how like loyal this is to the novel it's based on, and yeah.
Have you read it?
No, I haven't, but I'm very curious
Okay.
too. Yeah.
Very curious. I'm very curious because, again, like you said, it feels very consolidated. So, what's the novel? Is it this, or is there so much more to explore there? I really want to go to that. But Yeah, what I was going to say as well is I love what you were saying earlier, Zaylin, about the getting to know the characters before shit goes down. And it's interesting because for such a tight film, you know, what is it, an hour and 26, an hour and 27 minutes, we don't get that much time before stuff is happening, right? They've got to get to it. And yet, I was surprised at how well I could differentiate our main crew and their different sort of personalities and their relationships to each other and their tensions or their what have you. I was surprised at how quickly I could click in and be like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, this is the doctor, this is the engineer, you know, this is the guy who's, yeah, he left his wife behind, she's pregnant, this is the woman who's pregnant, this is the couple that's creating a romance with each other. I was like so interested at the economy of how well we got to know these characters before we start discovering shit in space.
Yeah, there are a lot of parts with it when it's an interesting thing to visit some film that is considered a pioneer towards films that they probably improved on certain elements of it. So I felt like, you know, right, revisiting like a classic tune that was, you know, enhanced by like a heavy metal band, you know, in our current time. And this is
Right.
like, oh, this is the original tune for it, and it might be not fine-tuned and, you know, developed, you know, 100% for our, like, you know, entertainment as it is as this day and age. But you see, like, I try to imagine, like, watching this in the 60s,
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
at the time would have been like, wow, you know. So now
But
there's a lot of interesting things about this.
I think we talk about this film as being a pioneer and inspiration for lots of films, but also in terms of like the visuals, I still think this film is taking inspiration from even Hollywood movies from the 50s. Like if you look at, for example, you know, Robbie the Robot from the film Forbidden Planet, it's pretty identical to what Patrick the
Really?
Robot looks like in this film.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen it. What's
I think it was coming out at the time when I think in the 50s there was not just Hollywood films, but there was a huge surge of like Soviet sci-fi films. And at the time, some, you know, like analysts would say that maybe, you know, the Soviet era films or maybe even provided even more to the development of the sci-fi films. There was another one that I think it was just came out maybe a couple of years before this. So I think, you know, that I think with the sci-fi, it's always like that. If sometimes you put something on the screen, you get influenced. But the fact that you have Stanley Kubrick, part like that, that's what I've been heard, that specifically the beginning part changed his mind of what he wanted 2001 to be, because realized that those elements where you see on there, like they eat a lot of eating scenes and just working out and things like that, those are could add to the script in a different way, that it just might not necessarily move the story forward, but it gives you, the audience, some sort of comfort level, because they kind of adjust to the surroundings rather than having like a ship that there's so many different gadgets and stuff on it, and you try to figure out that what's the meaning or the purpose of those things. It's good to have something that it's kind of mixing up with your everyday life things, but it just has a little spin on it. That and yeah, that's I think that era is probably, there's a lot of good articles, and maybe we'll do a season of those. Just, you know, those sci-fi, you know, pioneering 50s, 60s sci-fi movies.
Please
That
do.
sounds very cool.
Please do. You heard it here first, everybody. You know, it's like that saying of, you know, there's no such thing as an original idea, right? That every single thing is influenced by something else in some shape or form or another. And you go back as early as this, and already, you know, it's interesting, you can still look at it and say, yeah, this was the pioneering film that influenced everything that came after it. but we can probably find a list of maybe 10 films that then influence this. And it's just, you know, it's just a cycle. You can just keep going back, back and back. I love that. It's just, there's just an endless discovery for movies. Can I make an admission? I'm going to confess something here, okay? Now, I don't want you to both to think any less of me. I haven't seen 2001 A Space Odyssey. So do I need to? Do I need to see that film?
I think if I would write up five films that must watch, you know, there's a book like Before You Die, so like this would be in the top five.
Wow.
500, 100%. And if it's possible to watch it in an IMAX screen, that would be even, because I've seen a viewing of this, the 2001, in a science museum, actually, in London. And it was a terrific presentation, because it was as intended originally, so you have a little intermission. Oh. You know, that, and Kubrick designed a specific score to be played during the intermission.
Oh.
So it's not only you get to have a little break, there is if you decide to just still stay on your seat, you get a specific soundtrack, and the lights will have to go down in a specific level.
Oh,
so it is something that when you get a chance or something, I actually envy you, because I want to be in your position.
Watch it for the first time. Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah. That sounds, and keeping you in it too, even though it's an interval, keeping you immersed within the world of the film by keeping the score going. The only time I've ever really seen that was when Tarantino released his Hateful Eight in 70mm, you know, only playing in specific venues, and it began with an overture, you know, so you just have this image on the screen, and then you hear Morricone's score for about 7-8 minutes, and that's it. Oh, that's so much fun. It's like an event, you know? And you know, speaking of music, the score to this movie was,
I think,
honestly,
it was incredible.
Incredible and so singular. It feels so unique. You know, and then there's all these sounds. I don't know if it's part of the score, but like these dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. And it just, you keep, you know, it reminded me a lot of J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. In that score, every now and then you just hear this beep-beep-beep-beep-beep. And it just adds to this feeling that, oh my God, you know, you're floating in space. And yeah, even there's these transitions that this filmmaker makes in between scenes, you know, where he tries to show the spaceship kind of zooming past, exactly the same in Star Trek, you know, where you just see the ship hurtling in light speed, just, and then we cut to the next, obviously way more elegantly done for our times, but yeah,
no,
absolutely.
Agreed. I mean, there is there are a lot of technical elements in the film, with just the modeling as well. And then we will talk about, you know, like this Soviet era and the Czechoslovakian and production, but it's another link to Star Trek that, you know, there was despite they all speaking in Czech, was it actually a very international crew, like the actors and the people involved in this film. So it was already kind of like having this image of an international collection of, you know, of species on the spaceship. Mm. And then they wanted to have the same element when it comes to the filmmaking as well. I mean, you know, if you look at the storyline, it's kind of, you know, standard sci-fi, if you look at it, you know, like citizens of, you know, like a utopian future society, they shaking their heads in sorry of the disbelief of what the, you know, like warlike nature of our ancestors, the barbaric, you know, events that do place. And I also wanted you guys check about how do you feel about, because when it comes to sci-fi films, there's always like an element of, you understand that it's a sci-fi, so you play by the rules. Mm. But there are some sci-fi films that are thinking like, oh, this doesn't sound believable. This depends on, even though there is, you know, like a fantasy element. But I thought, you know, when you set your film in the distant future, you know, like was it 2000?
2163 or something like that?
You can get
Yeah.
away with the lot of things that, you know, like how do you perish fruits and, you know, the meats you eat is how do you keep it fresh and stuff. You don't have to worry about it because it's like, okay, well, if they figure it out 200 years now, 150 years now, that would be all good to go. But yeah, I think it's even you mentioned, I think you mentioned, Luke, Forbidden Planet, and I think I probably I could hear some influences in this score actually, with all the electronic tonalities and with the, as you said, mentioned the robot look like, and it sounds like a little bit like, you know, Robbie, isn't it? So it's cool, but for me it's cool that especially when the film production at the time, it wasn't as, you know, like global like it is in this day and age. For at the time, for them to get, you know, those elements incorporated in their own style, I find it actually pretty cool.
I love that you touch on that. Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And it's even as well. I mean, it's like this in this incredible sci-fi movie, again, full of fantasy elements, full of suspense and gadgets and all of this. The one moment that sticks out for me so powerfully is when the two are having this conversation and one of them is playing the piano, and you have this other character lamenting these human beings from the 21st century, these animals, you know, they're just animals, you know, who know nothing but pain, torture, killing. And he lists Hiroshima and World War II. You know, this is the result of the 20th century. And the guy playing the piano just stops and says, Honegger, you know, who was a Swiss composer, and he says, also from the 20th century. Oh my God, just that dichotomy, that
Mic drop,
amazing. Yes, mic drop.
Yeah.
incredible.
I was reading quite a bit about this film, and apparently in 1964, when there was the American release of the film, they actually recut and redid quite a bit of the film,
I read this,
and they changed the destination from the white planet to the green planet in this limited American release. And I'm not going to spoil the ending, but they completely changed the ending to something, let's say, very Planet of the Apes like.
Wow, interesting.
It's not
Did
the
you?
first time it would happen, to be honest, that they would take a different spin on things. But I would say to that one that I'll still probably take that approach over, let's just do a shot-to-shot remake, and then, you know, take it, because that happens a lot. You know, sometimes you see a good foreign film coming out, and rather than try to embrace that film, it's like, oh, well, let's just get our actors in and just let the same script, let's have it in English version. And then sometimes you lose a lot of things, you know, the originality of it. But yeah, it's I guess it's, I get, take a credit. If you're a filmmaker, you take the compliment that they feel like that, you know, your film is worthy to be showing and screening as well, even though if you do some changes to it. But as long as they have the original version available at some point, it'd be interesting to see
Yeah,
if that.
I haven't seen. Have you seen it, Luke? Did you watch that alternate ending or?
No. I watched the ending with the white planet, yeah.
I see. Okay. Apparently, it's on the Blu-ray, so it might be worth checking out, because now I'm just, yeah, I'm so curious about why even and if that leaves it, because the ending is quite cool. I love how they end it, but does it change anything in any particular? I'll be very curious. All right. So, what would you both pair this movie with? Luke, let's start with you.
Well,
Which Tarkovsky movie have you gone for?
I think clearly I'm going to pair this with Solaris. I think they're very similar movies, but there's with Solaris, it's quite a more profound and deeper, like psychological exploration of of kind of unknown cosmological effects. That's a way of putting it. But and again, like I said, it would be super interesting because there's definitely a clear inspiration from Ikari in Solaris. But I think Solaris is a much heavier film when it comes to the substance, and I think they've just complement each other quite well.
Nice. You're talking about the George Clooney one, aren't you? what came first?
Solaris came 1972, yeah.
Solaris is 1970. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Again, I've never seen it, so I need to...
It's a long one. It's a long one, and it's... I would not recommend watching it if you're tired.
Okay.
But it's a good movie.
Thanks for the heads up.
To be honest, you could say that for most Tarkovsky. But there are so many things to really like discover and unwrap on those films. It's just one of those things that it is one tier above, isn't it? When it comes to, like, it is really the Solaris is you know, the might be on the Mount Rushmore of sci-fi films. So that's a really good one.
Nice. Yeah, I need to put that on my list. Zaylin.
It's also a great book as well, because that's a book that I have read by Stanislav Slem.
Oh, the same author. It's a good book. Oh, yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
So I thought about, based on the experience I had with you guys in the last time around, that I decided I'm going to go out of the box here. I didn't pick actually a sci-fi film to pair with. I picked a completely different genre, but I'm really obsessed with that part, that little dance scene that, you know, happened in this film. It's just a lot of things about the social interaction, and that there's something very charming about that sequence. And apparently, I've been told that in the Czech Republic, they actually were doing Ikari XB1 themed parties.
Oh, come on.
Honestly, I mean, I heard about it. It's like, this sounds so cool. Like, let me check if there's anything available for Halloween.
Yeah.
But my pairing is actually a Jean-Luc Godard movie, Band of Outsiders, which has one of the most iconic dance sequences with Anna Karina, Sami Frey, and Claude Brasseur. And that scene itself, it was more known than the film itself, because Godard hated that film. Wow. But that scene became such a classic that is being used in other films as well, you know, from Tarantino for Pulp Fiction, and you know, a lot of other films as well. But that was also has a little inspiration with, and it just the two things, because it's such an iconic part of that film, and it's just, you know, famous cafe scene. And then when I watched Ikari, straight away, like, you know, that's the first thing that came to my mind. Oh wow, this reminds me of that. And I just thought it's interesting when you could have two completely different genres and eras and filmmakers, but you find a moment that it just somewhat connects. It's probably not a great watch, if people not seen many Godard films, it's not the one I would recommend. But you could find this clip. It's a very, you know, famous clip from Band Apart. So that's my choice for this one.
I have actually seen that one, and it's the one where they're running through the Louvre as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's another iconic scene. Yeah, that's an interesting choice. I wouldn't have put these two together, but I
love that. Yeah. So, what's the movie called?
Band Apart. I mean, the English title is Band of Outsiders.
Band so Apart. Isn't that also Tarantino's like production company?
Yeah.
Or something.
You might have been actually the you right on the money. It might have been the
I think it
inspiration
is,
for it. Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, I love it. You know what I most look forward to when we do these pairings is that you guys are going to throw something at me that I've never seen. And I love it. I've never seen this film, so I can put that on the list as well. Excellent. I look forward to it.
John Lee Hooker's Shake It Baby. That's the tune you want to listen to afterwards.
I'll do that. I'll do that. My pairing that I've gone for is nowhere near. It's not an upper class pairing by any means. I've gone with a sci-fi film, but I think it's trash, but I love it. It's the movie Event Horizon, from 1997. I think it's Paul Anderson, Paul W.S. Anderson. I loved this film since I was a kid, and it's a science fiction horror film. The reason I chose it is have you guys seen it?
It's I don't think I liked it, but I know that it kind of became a kind of a cult movie, you know, like the Prince Charles show and it. So it's not something that it didn't work for me, but I could see the appeal of why it's an incredible cast, and it's a fun film in a way, right?
Totally, yeah. And I can see why 11, 12-year-old me loved it, but it's essentially about this team of astronauts that are on a rescue mission to go and to board this ship, the Event Horizon, that has disappeared for a few years and now just reappeared. And so they bring along the engineer of the entire ship, played by Sam Neill. And you have a great cast. You have Lawrence Fishburne, you've got Kathleen Quinlan, Joely Richardson, a really good cast. And they board the ship only to find that it's sort of entered some sort of black hole and come back from a place that was, very, very sinister. So now there's like this sinister evil force on the ship. Again, it's probably trash. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember really enjoying it when I did watch it. And that whole sequence in this movie where they board this ship and, what they're discovering with their flashlights as they explore it really made me think of that. And I think Event Horizon takes it to real horror extremes of that. But yeah, that would be my pairing.
That's
So,
good.
I haven't actually seen that, but
oh,
yeah, want to add to the list, I think.
yes. Apologies if you don't like it, but yeah, I'd be curious to hear what you think. Well, honestly, thank you both so much, Zaylin. It's been such a pleasure having you back, and I can't wait to have you back on the next one. I feel like we could continue talking about this movie. There's so much more to say. But
Yeah,
yeah, we'll
a
probably
lot
leave
to
it there.
unpack.
Really, honestly. I will lastly say, anyone interested in watching this movie, and I think this comes highly recommended from us. Can you agree with that?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
This isn't the easiest film to track down. The film is available in its entirety for free on YouTube, or you can do one even better and head to secondrundvd.com, where you can purchase Akari XB1 on DVD or even special edition Blu-ray. As of last time I checked the website, though, the DVD was sold out, which I guess is an indicator of the demand to own this film on physical media. And you better believe I placed an order for my Blu-ray copy. I absolutely want this on my shelf. So yeah, check it out, as well as a whole other selection of super cool and interesting world cinema titles also available through the website. Quick question, Zaylin. Are you going to be working with Second Run again?
Yes, so we are 100%. We're looking, and that's actually a very exciting project. I can't say too much, but we were gonna hopefully bring in a complete season of Portuguese cinema next year, and we're hoping to get the director involved with the curation and being present as well, because that's one of also like a part of cinema world that I haven't discovered fully. And I heard interesting takes on, and then a Second Run have a few films about it. And it's just wanted to add to your point as well, that all their release is always the best possible picture and sound quality. So they're making the effort to have these gems to be presented in the newest and most modern form. All of them have English subtitles, and they were very carefully chosen extra features added to it as well. So it's definitely good to browse around, because there's some of the films, I'll be honest with you, 90% of them I never heard of them,
Never
and it's
heard,
always
yeah.
it comes with an interesting story or a background, and it just you always unpack something about that, you know, snippets of area or culture in any part of the world. So it's we definitely we're looking into to bring in new titles. There's one Christmas film I can't reveal the title yet because we're looking to get the licensing stuff, but we might have some special for Christmas. So maybe
Oh,
for a Christmas episode, that will be a good one to
exciting. That's very exciting. And as for this Portuguese season, Zaylin, you're literally speaking my mother's language. So I will be there. I will be there. That's
Terrific.
fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for coming back, sir. And yeah, I hope to speak to you again soon.
Terrific. All the best and catch you some other time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Again, special thanks to Phoenix Cinema as always. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Hey, if you like this podcast, please share, like, rate, and subscribe on your way to watching a movie at the Phoenix Cinema. I'll see you there.